It's Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and it's time for the New Hampshire News Recap. Tens of millions of dollars are at stake as Governor Chris Sununu and the state's hospitals battle over a key source of health care funding, the Medicaid enhancement tax. NHPR's health and equity reporter, Paul Kuno Booth, has been following that story, and he joins us now. Morning, Paul.
Morning, Rick.
Paul, first, can you tell us more about the Medicaid enhancement tax? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a bit complicated, so bear with me for a sec. Basically, hospitals in New Hampshire pay a tax on their patient revenues. The state then redistributes most of that money back to the hospitals. This is in the form of payments meant to compensate them for caring for uninsured patients. But by doing this, the state is able to receive the same amount in federal matching funds. And this is a big part of how we pay for Medicaid in this state. And it's a pretty big pot of money. This brought in more than $300 million to New Hampshire in the most recent year.
Yeah, that's an awful lot of money. What would Governor Sununu and the state like to change about how this money is distributed? What's their argument?
So the agreement that currently governs how this money gets distributed to hospitals, that's about to expire in about 9 days, actually. So there's been a lot of back and forth over the past 6 weeks between the governor, the legislature, and the hospital industry. Basically, the state wants to change the way these payments to hospitals are structured. I won't get into all the details there, but essentially it would allow New Hampshire to get an extra $20 or $30 million in those federal matching funds every year, which again could go back into our Medicaid program. Governor Sununu also wants to direct more of that money into other parts of the healthcare system that he says really need more funding, you know, things like substance use treatment, community mental health treatment. Now, the problem with restructuring those payments from the hospital's point of view is that it creates winners and losers. Some hospitals would get more than they do now, but others would get less. And they say that would hit some small rural hospitals pretty hard and put their financial viability at risk.
Is the governor's proposal moving ahead, Paul?
So the hospitals pushed back on his initial plan, and lawmakers in the Senate did try to craft a last-minute compromise that basically would have given the hospitals more money to sort of offset some of those impacts they were worried about. But that fell apart when both House negotiators and the governor opposed giving the hospitals that extra money. Around the same time, the governor directed the state health department to move forward with a new plan. This one would actually slash funding for hospitals by about $35 million overall on top of those other changes we were talking about. And that's where things stand now.
So the response from New Hampshire hospitals, you said they're pushing back. What did they say would be the impact if these funds are, if this plan does go ahead and funds are diverted elsewhere?
Well, they're issuing pretty dire warnings. You know, they say this would threaten the stability of New Hampshire's healthcare system at a time when hospitals are already dealing with workforce shortages and rising costs. Tom Mee is CEO of North Country Healthcare, and he says their margins are already razor thin, and a funding cut like this could, you know, undermine essential services.
I operate the only obstetric program in all of Cowas County. Which we subsidize by millions of dollars a year just so that we can continue to support it.
For his part, Governor Sununu says the hospitals have already been getting a pretty sweet deal, and other parts of the healthcare system need that money more. It's worth noting this is not the first time the governor has sparred publicly with the hospitals. You know, he's also claimed repeatedly they're not pulling their weight when it comes to mental health care. This is, of course, something the hospitals vigorously dispute. But, you know, this is part of the context here and the governor's argument for diverting some of this money to community mental health providers.
Okay, well, I imagine some of those providers might be on board with this. What are mental health centers having to say about the state's proposal to send more money their way by changing this Medicaid enhancement tax?
Well, you know, they're not really taking a position on this, in fact. When I spoke to the head of the group that represents New Hampshire's community mental health centers, you know, he said we of course, appreciate the governor's support, but the hospitals have also been really good partners to us. And this is something, you know, they say that needs to be worked out between the governor and the hospitals. But, you know, they do say in general, community mental health centers are struggling financially. A lot of their patients have lost Medicaid coverage after some special rules that were in place during the pandemic expired. So they're caring for a lot more uninsured patients, and that's really been a hit to their bottom line. In fact, we reported this week that Riverbend, the mental health center here in Concord, plans to close an outpatient therapy program that, that's been around for decades and serves over 300 patients. And they cited that spike in uncompensated care costs as a major reason they can't afford to keep that program going.
Now, the legislative session is wrapping up soon, and the fate of this Medicaid enhancement tax is still up in the air. So what comes next, Paul?
You know, that's a great question. The governor has directed state officials to submit his proposed changes to the federal government for approval. I've asked the state when they plan to submit that. They have not gotten back to me. Meanwhile, the New Hampshire Hospital Association, which represents the state's, you know, two dozen hospitals, says it's considering all its options. They wouldn't say specifically what they're thinking about. But it's worth noting the hospitals have taken the state to court before over previous versions of this tax. So that, I imagine, is one possibility.
Okay. Now, before you go, Paul, I want to ask you, what are some of the other health bills that have been on the governor's desk? There's a slew of them right now. What are lawmakers looking to pass this session?
Yeah. There's a couple bills that have made it through the legislature, and now we're waiting to see what Governor Sununu does with them. One would prohibit schools from imposing mask mandates, of course, a major issue during the pandemic. Another relates to community health workers. These are folks who might, you know, do health-related outreach or, you know, make sure people just have what they need to access the health system, whether that's transportation or language assistance. So this bill would set up a certification program for those workers and also allow their services to be billed by Medicaid. Organizations that have community health worker programs say this would, you know, make that funding a lot more sustainable for them. Finally, there's a bill banning certain gender-affirming surgeries for trans minors. You know, LGBTQ rights groups have been putting a lot of pressure on the governor not to sign that bill, as well as a couple others that, you know, they say would harm transgender youth in particular. So we'll see what he does with those.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. I know there's obviously a lot of talk about that. What have we gotten from the governor? Is there any indication about what bills he is going to sign or not?
Yeah, you know, we haven't gotten a lot. One of these bills that I mentioned that's pending would actually, you know, bar trans girls from competing in girls' sports in middle and high school. That's something, you know, that the governor has sort of previously expressed, you know, general agreement with or general, you know, sympathy towards that argument, but didn't outright say whether or not he would sign it, said he'd have to look for the final bill. Otherwise, you know, we're still waiting to hear. Another of those bills would actually amend a non-discrimination statute that he signed into law himself in 2018 to basically allow, you know, organizations to prevent trans people from using the bathrooms they want to use. So advocates hope that, you know, by reminding him of his previous support for this other bill, that might have an effect. But again, we're just waiting to see what he says.
Okay. We'll be waiting for your reporting on that. NHPR's Paul Kuno Booth, reporting on health inequity for NHPR. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thanks, Rick.
You can find more of his work, by the way, at nhpr.org. New Hampshire saw its first heat wave of the summer this week. NHPR meteorologist Rob Carolyn joins us now to talk about what's been causing these extreme temperatures. Hey, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Cooling down a little bit today. What areas were hardest hit this week in this heat wave?
Well, generally the southern and central part of the state. Yesterday, we saw temperatures exceed 100 degrees all the way from Bedford up through the Canterbury area, almost as far north as Laconia. Saw lots of readings at 100, 101 during the afternoon, and with the dew points being in the low 70s, it's actually feeling like it was about 110 to 115 during the afternoon on Wednesday.
That's incredible. Is that unusual for this early of the season? Is it unusual for New Hampshire to see those temperatures in any case?
It's a little unusual. It's more so now than it used to be. Back in the 19-teens, 20s, and 30s, we used to see readings above 100 degrees in New Hampshire much more frequently than we do now. The reason for that is, back in the teens, 20s, and 30s of the 20th century, most of the state was pasture land. So it had the tendency to heat up more than it does now because much more of the state is covered with forest. The trees have the tendency to prevent that excessive heat from developing. So it's a little more rare than it used to be a little over about 100 years ago.
Okay, so this was something that meteorologists have been calling a heat dome. Is that right?
It is. It's just another term that they've decided to come up to describe what we when I went to school in the 80s, we're taught Bermuda High. We have a big area of high pressure over the eastern United States and out in the Atlantic. What it's doing, Rick, is it's producing a broad southwesterly flow. It brings warm temperatures up from the Gulf of Mexico along with the humidity, spreads it east, and this high is particularly strong. So we're seeing really warm temperatures from the mid and lower Mississippi River Valley up into the Ohio River Valley, the central Great Lakes, and then across the mid-Atlantic and northeast with this system.
So really the term heat dome, this is nothing new technically. This is just a new term for it?
Exactly. It's just like what we used to call winter weather now is called the polar vortex. They've come up with this term, a heat dome, describing just, an area that gets really, really warm, very, very humid. The air becomes stagnant. Back in the 70s, this used to be what we used to call Triple H weather, hazy, hot, and humid. We've lost some of the haze because of the improvements, not using leaded gasoline anymore. Air quality is a little bit better now because of all the changes the EPA made back in the 70s. But this is something we used to go through. It's a little early, and one of the reasons we're seeing it earlier is the fact that last winter was so mild, the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico didn't really cool off very much. That, in turn, has given us a head start. Since we're around the summer solstice, the sun gets no stronger than it is this time of year. So if you can get temperatures on the warm side, have day length beyond 15 hours, and the sun is high up in the sky as it is, you can have some really warm afternoon temperatures.
Now, should we expect more of these kinds of heat waves in New Hampshire, in the future in general? I mean, is it going to be a hot summer overall, you think?
I do think it's going to be a hot summer. We're certainly in a different pattern than we were last year. By this time last year, we had already had 12, 13 days of rain. Temperatures were running 2 to 3 degrees below normal. We've only had about 4 or 5 days worth of rain this month, and we're running between 2 and 3 degrees above normal. So you can already see the change in the pattern. Usually when we go from an El Nino into a La Nina during the spring and summer, the summer has the tendency to get hotter and drier as it goes on. So I think we're going to probably see several more heat waves this summer, and certainly much more than we had last summer.
Okay, get ready for it, I guess.
Absolutely.
NHPR meteorologist Rob Carolyn, thanks so much for the time, Rob.
You're more than welcome, Rick.
You can hear Rob's weather reports every day here on Morning Edition on NHPR and NHPR.org. I'm Rick Gamley, and this is NHPR.